Sorry, do you know that you mentioned that episode 63, but this one is 64, I think.
Ah, because it's on the wrong number there.
I'm not sure if it matters a lot, but...
No, it does matter.
Yeah, okay.
Let me just do that a little bit again. Welcome to GCP Life, episode number 64, for Friday, the 10th of May, 2024. GCP Life is sponsored by Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. And I'm your host, Stephen Bancroft. On today's show, Google Cloud growth surprises everyone. Who has leaked customer data now? Who is buying HashiCorp? Plus, how can AI save us from certain doom in the AI wars? But before we get to any of that, I'd like to welcome the co-host of the show, fresh from the sick bed, Dmitry Pokidov. Mate, you don't look good.
Hey Steve, that flu is quite terrible this year. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a cracker. I had it a few weeks ago and it sat me down, that's for sure. So, the show must go on, Dimmy. The show must go on. We're here to make the content for everyone and appreciate your efforts, mate. Appreciate your efforts.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
I did have a plan B. I had Troy lined up, so if we needed to. But you've made the effort, so that's good to see. Yeah. Aside from being horizontal in a bed, have you been up to anything else during the fortnight?
Yeah, some of the interesting stuff that I was playing with, one of them was Imagen model on GCP, the one that generates or can edit images and stuff. So there's like a new version, I think version 6 of its released. It actually looks pretty good. Mm. I liked it a lot, especially I was looking at it for like some e-commerce things of like how can the images be edited or adding some backgrounds and stuff, and it looks pretty cool. And there is also like the actual products image mode, so you can, there is a checkbox there that you can also enable, which is pretty cool. So I liked it.
Cool. It uses an Gen AI model, does it? Is it its own model, or is it using?
Imagen. Right. It's like So the model called Imagen. Yeah.
Okay.
So they're using. So if you go to like a Vertex AI Studio to like vision stuff, that's what it would use. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Okay. Hmm. I tried a little something today. One of the articles we'll get on with a little bit later. They're using AI to reverse engineer some malware. And I thought, it's a great idea. How about I get some old, retro computing code, and I'll see if it can decompile it for me.
Okay.
So I downloaded, I had a copy of Jumpman from the Commodore 64.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, you couldn't just dump the file straight in there, right, because it's a D64 file. So, I can convert it into a hex file. So I'll do that. I'll convert it into a hex file, hex dumped it. And of course, you need a really long token input link. So I'll put it into Gemini, went in there, the AI Studio, and put it into Gemini Pro 1.5. So can you decompile this for me? Can you give me the source code for this? I said, no, I couldn't do it. My dreams were shattered.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
the day will come, though, I'm sure.
Yeah, might just need to wait until 2.0.
Yeah, but we'll get onto that story a little bit later. That's what's been going on, though. Now, I've had a bit of fun during the fortnight. I've got a VMware cluster going here, and I've rebuilt that thing 3 times the fortnight coming. For various reasons, but the last reason I had to rebuild it is because I accidentally deleted the vSAN in VM kernel interfaces. Now, if you know anything about that, it means the entire virtual SAN was lost, and I destroyed all my VMs in the process, so it was a lot easier just to rebuild it. So, Steve, don't do that one again.
How did it happen, like accidentally deleted?
Because I was trying to get VMotion working.
Yeah.
And I couldn't get it working. I was trying to actually get VMotion working over a HCX link. And for whatever reason, when you create HCX, you've got to have your VMotion interface set up so it knows about VMotion, but I hadn't at that point. So when I created HCX and VMotion didn't work, I went back and created the VMotion interfaces and it still didn't work. And then I noticed the vSound interface had vMotion on it. And I went, oh, well, I'll just delete that interface and it should recognize that it's now on the other interface and should work. Yeah.
Mm.
But vSound happened to be on that interface as well. And then everything stopped and I went, why have all my VMs suddenly become invalid? Because they're on the SAN, no longer accessible. So that was that fun. But now, needless to say, I can rebuild a VMware vSAN cluster pretty quickly and I kind of know what I'm doing with it.
Yeah.
And outside of that, talking about SANs and NASs and all this stuff again, my Synology NAS, my personal Synology NAS that had has all my stuff on it, that also failed during the fortnight.
Oh.
That was a pretty hair-raising moment, I have to tell you. I was sitting in the lounge room on the laptop, and I was doing some Ansible stuff just on my home local deployment, and I realized that sometimes the Ansible would run and sometimes it wouldn't run, and then sometimes it was slow and it wouldn't respond, and then other times it worked perfectly. What the heck's going on here? And I'm tracing it, and we'd been having this problem with Plex as well, where sometimes it'd play a movie perfectly fine, and then other times it'd just stop halfway through, and then Plex would go off in the gaga land and just wouldn't respond, and then suddenly it'd start responding again. What the heck's going on here? And I discovered, finally, for whatever reason, and I wasn't sort of chasing that fault, I logged onto the NAS interface, the GUI, and they have this DSM OS, and there was a warning in the top, and I opened that and it says, your SAN has rebooted unexpectedly, and it had that message about 20 times.
All right.
What the heck's going on here? Quickly ran into the other room where the NAS is. Yeah, and sure enough, it was actually in a reboot cycle.
All right.
When I was there, and all the lights were flashing, and oh my God, what's been going on here? It had just been perpetually rebooting. I don't know how long it had been going on for, and I think it had just been progressively getting worse. And so I started, hit the Google, looked at the forums, and a lot of people were saying, yeah, it's probably RAM, faulty RAM. I said, all right, I've got 16 gigs in it. I'll go and dig up an old 2 gig SDIM and stick that in there. Yeah. No change. It still did that. And then after I was literally like 10 minutes of mucking around with it, it just died and then wouldn't power on anymore.
All right.
So it just completely died. Doesn't surprise me because the box itself was about 10 years old. I bought it secondhand. And when I bought it, it wouldn't power on. I had to change one of the resistors in it to change the drop voltage on the power button so that it would power on. And it worked. It's worked fine for about 5 years, 5 years. And, suddenly giving up the ghost.
Yeah. So I guess you're out of warranty on this one.
Out of warranty on this one. Now, the thing about Synology NASs is they're expensive, right? And now I know why. Right? Because you can get that thing. Now, I did some reading on it, like, how am I going to get out of this, right? Like, the current, that was an 8-bay, and the current equivalent model of the 8-bay was sort of $2,500 just for the NAS.
Whoa.
Now I wasn't, that was well outside my budget. I didn't pay that because I bought it secondhand originally, right? I think I got it for like $900, right? The 6-bay was $1,500. That's what I ended up getting. And the 4-bay was like under 1,000. Now the 4-bay didn't really suit me because there's only 2 NIC interfaces. And the way I got my network set up, I wanted the 4 NIC interfaces. So I had to go with the 6-bay. And the way I've got it set up is with a RAV 5 and then a hot spare. So I've got 6 disks. So the 6-bay worked for me.
Yeah.
Now, the thing with Synology NASs is you can get, as long as you can fit the disks in, you can get any model and you can stick the disks in and it will automatically detect it. And that's exactly what I did. I put the disks in, powered it up,
figured out the IP address, went to the IP address, and it had a nice little thing there, little wizard. Oh, see, this has come from a 1518 NAS. Would you like to upgrade? Mm. Yeah, okay, yes. And it went through an upgrade process. Boom, just straight away.
Nice.
Didn't have to restripe the disks or anything, just upgraded it all in situ. Oh. That's what you pay the money for right there.
Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I've got 30 terabytes on there or something of like all my projects, all backups of the show and movie videos and movies and stuff. Yeah, I did not want to lose that thing.
Yeah, 100%. Yep.
But I do have it backed up in a bucket. So most of it, the important stuff is all backed up in a bucket, all the photos and, you know, stuff, my projects and things. I got a script that pushes that into a bucket. But it still would have been a massive pain in the neck if I lost it.
Mm. Yeah, that's right. Nah. Oh, good, it's all there.
We're back. Yeah, safe. We're back to square one. So we're good. Yeah.
You got a new toy as well. So,
Well, I mean, it's back in the rack and it's working. And I hope I don't need to touch it. Right. that's the idea. While we're on the tech subjects, we've got Ubuntu 24.04 has been released. They're calling it Noble Numbat. Because they always go with the onomatopoeia of the NN, whatever it is for this time around. Now, they're increasing the support for 12 years on this one, which I found interesting. It's been 10, I believe, previously. We've also got a bunch of improvements. We've got kernel 6.8 with this, which includes improved syscall performance, nested KVM support on PPC. Okay, interesting. And access to newly landed BKHFS. It'd be a B-tree file system. And interestingly, for creators, and I suppose this helps in cloud as well, they merged the low latency kernel feature into the default kernel. Now, I've played with this before. Really interesting for music creators because obviously you need low latency if you're doing things in real time. Yeah, and if you were using Linux up to this point, you had to get one of the special distros that had the low latency stuff enabled, or you could compile your own kernel and enable the low latency, which is what I've done in the past. But no, they're getting it out of the box now in Ubuntu.
Yeah, no, that's cool. Yeah, I wonder why they wouldn't enable it by default. This is like a real-time features, right? Is that like that RT Linux that you had to use before, right? For any
that's
of that
right.
stuff?
That's right, for the real-time stuff, yeah. Interrupt, there's... it gives you a real-time option and the interrupts don't interrupt so often. It's why wasn't it like that all the time? You got to ask the question, right? I don't really know.
Yeah. So have you tried it already?
I did the installer, and now I may miss this on the old installer, but what I really liked about the Debian installer was the disk partitioning and the disk sort of formatting options in Debian. Because what I've done in the past, if I'm building like a physical, like a hardware box, and I want to set up some RAID, right, or some LVM, right, I'll boot into the Debian install, do the setup in the Debian install, then go back to the Ubuntu install and mount the volumes that way and install it that way. Mm. No, you don't have to do that anymore, right? Because you can actually do it from the server install is what I played from. There is an option to do custom partitioning, and it's all in there. RAID and LVM's all in there now.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. Oh, that's nice.
So go and give that a go. There's a bunch of new features as well. Support for .NET 8.
Yeah. That's actually, I read that. That's pretty cool. Yeah, that they kind of extending support for .NET stuff. And there's like a bunch of, the language tool chains included there as well. Yeah. No, that's good.
And OpenJDK 21. Yeah. Like anyone's ever going to get off 8 anyway.
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Should we get on with the community news?
Yes.
Let's get on with the community news. Google Cloud Summit. It's going to be in Sydney On the 15th of May from 8 a.m. to 6.40 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time. Very specific, 6.40. The website might be a bit tricky to find, but you're looking for, I'll link it in the show notes, but you're looking for the Cloud On Air website that talks about Google Cloud Summit. You can register there on that page. What have we got here, Dimmy? We've got five tracks.
Yeah.
Of course, track one, AI, straight off the top.
Yeah.
Track two, Born to Cloud. Track three, Analytics. Track four, Modern Cloud Infrastructure. And track five, Security. You know, security, it always gets the end, right? It's always like the last thing we think about. It's like, by the way, security.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it? Maybe a couple of years ago, before AI was around, security was a hot topic, right? It was up front. So I'm just looking through the agenda here. We've got some keynotes kicking off from 9 o'clock, and then a bit of a morning tea, and then the tracks start from 11 o'clock. So a bunch of stuff there. You can go and register, and you also get the opportunity to add each of those things to your calendar for what you might like to see.
The website, actually, apart from that it's tricky to find, it's looking pretty good. The talks are very interesting because you can see that there are like quite a few technical talks that I would definitely enjoy, and there are some case studies as well that I like to listening to those. There will be some from like and others. So now looking good. The agenda looking pretty cool. And the mental group will be there. So the booth with some of the engineers with some exciting demos about AI and the AppMod, GKE, Cloud Run stuff. Yeah, so if you'll be there, then come over.
No. We can catch up. I might try and get down there with my little recording device and see if I can get some of the atmosphere that's going on.
That would be cool. Yep. 100%.
Yeah, and of course, the day before that, we've got the partner summit as well, which is for partners. So they've got some juicy stuff in that for us as well. So it could be 2 days in a row that we're hanging out. Well, I'm in Sydney, so I might be hanging out there.
Yeah.
Cool. So go and check that out. Now, of course, Google I/O is coming up. When is that? Now, interestingly timed, Google I.O., I'm reading the time here, Wednesday the 15th of May, that's at 3 a.m., so I'm not sure where they're actually holding it, but it's in US time, so that'll be occurring on the 14th of May, our time. You can go and actually register for that, and the thing is, what I've noticed with Google AI in the past, if you're not registered, then you don't have access to the stuff later. I don't know if that's the case. But if you register up front, you can go back later and watch the recorded sessions. So go and register.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. And the agenda looks really cool for that one.
All right. Well, that's the community news for this week. Let's get on with the news items. All right. First news item off the list is Google posts a 28% revenue jump in Q1 of 2024. How's this?
It's awesome news for Google Cloud. I think this one is for specifically for Google Cloud, right?
Specifically for Google Cloud, yeah.
Yeah, they posted 28%, and compared to the other two big one, then it looks pretty good.
Looks pretty good. I went around and grabbed some numbers. Yeah, GCP. Yeah. 28%, that equates to $9.57 billion, whereas Microsoft, now they don't list, unless it's changed, I went hunting for it once before, but they don't list Azure separately, but Microsoft, 23%, it's still massive, $35.1 billion, but only 23%, and then AWS languishing, 12%, still bigger than GCP at $23.1 billion. Dollars. But GCP clearly the greatest growth, as a per capita.
Yeah, and I really like the quote from CEO there that he was saying that Today, more than 60% of funded GenAI startups and nearly 90% of GenAI unicorns are Google Cloud customers. So, I guess it just shows how much Google is doing to capture all the AI use cases. And
And of course, then you get all the other services that come along with the AI usage, right?
Yeah.
And take a quote from the article here. As an example of the momentum the company is seeing in cloud thanks to AI, the Google One offering, which bundles cloud storage, AI capabilities, and other Google features in one shareable plan, has crossed more than 100 million paid subscriptions. In the first quarter, Google also recently introduced a premium AI plan called Gemini Advanced. 100 million paid subscriptions.
Yeah.
This is driving it.
Yeah, mind-blowing. Yeah. And and the stock raised 12% after that announcement, so it's much better than the expectations were, which is usually the main thing nowadays.
Yeah, and really quickly, I went and looked at the stock ticker, and it's like a cliff. It goes straight up really quickly overnight. That 12% jump was huge.
Yeah.
There was also YouTube advertising that's beat Wall Street's expectations as well. So we're seeing upticks across all the Google products, really.
And they decided to pay dividends as well.
Did pay dividends,
First time in they did some shares buyback and and also paid some dividends. So, how many Google shares do you have, Steve? How much dividends did you get?
Should have had some. They ended up paying the dividends will be 20 cents per share.
20 cents. Yeah.
Better than a poke in the eye with a burnt stick, I suppose. But the first time ever, And it's a $70 billion stock buyback, as you're saying.
And, so they're still in the leader Gartner Magic Quadrant Cloud AI Developer Services.
What is this? I'd not seen this before. You put this in here. This is a Gartner thing, right?
Yeah. Well, the Gartner, they're doing all this analysis and creating all this financial reporting and how things are looking. So they're like using lots of different metrics to compile those. On that one you could see that like they pretty much you got ability to execute and the completeness of vision, and then you kind of got these leaders, which is Google, Microsoft, AWS, and IBM actually, but somewhere at the very beginning of like a leaders. And then so the other types are like visionaries, which is OpenAI, the H2O AI, and you got like a challenges, Alibaba Cloud is a challenger, and the niche players is like a Oracle, Huawei, Tencent Cloud. So but then you could see that I think what's interesting is that the distance between like AWS, Google, and Microsoft is actually quite small. So the competition getting stronger and stronger between those three, which is, I don't know, if you think about like how it was like maybe 5 years ago and where it is now, it's kind of like getting more and more interesting. Probably good from consumer's perspective, right? More competition is probably always better.
Yeah, I had an interesting idea posited to me the other day by a YouTube video. Of course, I was mindlessly scrolling through YouTube. And I'll try and link this in the show notes. And they talked about the saturation of big tech, right? So here we are. We've got Meta. They've got Facebook and Facebook and Insta. Then you've got TikTok. You've got WhatsApp. You've got all these groups, right? And they're all vying for their share of the market. Now, in most countries, one of those big tech firms has about 98% to 99% of the market captured. And if you look across all of them globally, it's around 3 billion users per application. So the thinking is at the moment that we've kind of reached saturation point, right? We're not going to grow anymore. Facebook can't grow anymore, right? We're at 3 billion users. It's got 98 to 99% of the market. WhatsApp might have 98% in India, but, you know, in the US, it's some other chat thing that's got 98%. They're all kind of at saturation. And what they were saying in this particular video is that what we're experiencing at the moment, so you've got different generations of tech. So if you think of Gen 1 of tech, right, that's your Dells, your IBMs, your Oracles, right? That's Gen 1, right? Mm-hmm. That's the original 2000s-ish bubble burst dot-com era, yeah. Right? That's Gen 1, right? What we're experiencing at the moment is Gen 2. Right, so this is your social media generation, right? That now is at capacity. That is at capacity. Where's Gen 3? We're on the tipping point of Gen 3. What's it going to be? It's going to be AI, right? We can see we're on the cusp of it now. We're on the AI tipping point. We're about to see an explosion of new, you know, what this video would have referred to as Gen 3, and I tend to agree with this philosophy as well. Gen 3 big tech guys, right? So this diagram in this Gartner report kind of lines up with that thinking if you look at it, right? So Amazon, Google, and Microsoft is just perpetual, right? They're always there, right? They're up in that leader's corner, right? That's your Gen 2, whereas your old school Gen 1 guys that are just kind of hanging around, IBM, Oracle, they don't mention Dell, I guess, because they're PC manufacturers, but Hawaii Cloud, right? That's Hawaii do hardware as well. That's why I called them out there. They're just there, right? They're the old Gen 1 guys, right? We're going to start to see some AI startups creep into this, I reckon, and that'll push everything back down into that lower left corner.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, oh, it'll be interesting times.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move on then. A couple of new features coming out here, and some that Jimmy likes, some that I like. So we can run through those. What have we got here? We've got direct VPC egress on Cloud Run. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is. I know the probably one of the most annoying things always with the Cloud Run was that you had to create that serverless VPC connector, which usually would be backed by the instance to get like any traffic into your VPC. In some of the projects, we actually had problems with like scaling it, or you would even forget to scale it before going to production or something. So it was basically
a NAT device, isn't it? Basically, yeah, a NAT device. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, but it was something like so easy to forget about, and I personally wasn't a big fan of it. This one is basically allows you to get rid of it. It's a direct VPC egress on Cloud Run. It's been in preview and now it's general available, so you can use it on your production workloads and stuff. Some of the notable improvements are like from preview is that all regions are now supported. Before, it's also like you couldn't get more than 100 instances to go like through that direct VPC egress. So now it's there is still limit, but it's like a soft limit that you can always raise using the quotas. Mm-hmm. And Cloud NAT is supported, which is I think very cool, and should make because Cloud NAT would usually be used, right, for the egress from your projects, and before like Cloud, you couldn't use it for Cloud Run, so you couldn't really like limit.
You have to NAT out,
catch all your traffic in the NAT. So now you can. Yeah, so I think that's a good stuff, and really really nice seeing it going into the GA.
Yeah, and this seems to be a trend as well. GCVE, you used to have to connect with the private service access connector, but now you can just do VPC peering and more or less connect it directly. It's good they're getting rid of all those funky connectors for this and that. I mean, it's that's really was just a stopgap. I mean, that's how I see it. Yeah, we can connect it, but we're going to just do this in the meantime.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and the throughput is actually, well, for this particular one, it's like also twice the throughput compared to VPC connector.
One gigabit per second per instance. Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So it's more than enough for most of the use cases, I think.
It is. And what else we got here? GKE threat detection.
Yeah, that's another pretty cool. And, well, with the whole kind of, I don't know if you saw, but you go like every week you go into the GKE kind of into your clusters and there will be something new there. And yeah, so I think last time there was that security posture that I laughed about it. And yeah, now you got that threat detection, which is amazing. So it's lots of security features that you know, you just get out of the box by using GKE. And GKE is still, I believe probably, it's the best managed Kubernetes that you can ever wish for. So yeah, that this threat detection, well, the threat detection, to be honest, it's like only for the enterprise if you have an enterprise subscription. Though it gives you lots of detection controls, like break glass workload deployment creation, or detecting when workloads are updated by using the break glass flag, potentially malicious actor attempted to determine what sensitive objects in GKE they can query for. So it's basically a bunch of rules that living inside GKE that can detect any malicious activities, pretty much. So if someone was able to connect to your cluster or try to do something in your cluster, so this threat detection is basically what it's for. It will detect and alert on it. So
it looks like it uses the cloud audit logs to do that, right?
Yes. Yeah. Cloud audit logs. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, it's nice feature. Another one, and GKE is just awesome. Mm. I love it. Mm.
It is. And then another one that grabbed my you sent it to me and said, Steve, I don't know anything about this one.
Yeah, I have no idea.
And then it grabbed my attention. We now have verified peering providers. Now, you kind of have to read between the lines to kind of figure out what this is. But if you know how to connect from this is all about connecting from on-prem into GCP, right? Basically, there's a few ways to do that, and Cloud Interconnect is one of the big ones, and there's different types of Cloud Interconnect. You can do it with a VPN, of course, and Network Connectivity 7 and Cloud Router help you implement that, right? Now, that's if you're doing a straight IP connection. Now, there is another way to connect to GCP, and you can connect to Google Workspace and selected Google APIs, and that is with a peering connection. Now, up to now, there's been two types of peering connections. That's the direct peering and the carrier peering. And what that allows you to do, it's not a direct IP. You're not flowing IP traffic as you would like with a cloud interconnect. You're just accessing Google Workspaces and Google APIs, with API calls, and it gives you a low latency connection to GCP in that sense. Now, there's two ways you can do it. Direct peering and put your own connection in and connect directly to a Google Edge node, or if there's no Google close to you, you can use a carrier peering and go via your selected carrier into Google that way. But up to now, there's been no way to know who's a legitimate carrier that can do this, but now there is. Now we have the verified peering provider. And there's a list of verifying peering providers. So for us in Australia, that would mean using Telstra. And you'd probably have some Telstra links into Equinix. They've got a couple of data centers dotted around Sydney and Melbourne. And that's how you would get your verified peering connection to Google. And basically what they're saying is this company is verified. They will give you the high availability. They will give you the right sort of equipment. They'll give you the right sort of setup that will give the tick of approval.
Nice. That's good.
Very nice. I am not personally aware of anyone that would be using this at the moment. Definitely Cloud Interconnect VPN and Cloud Router, absolutely. I've not come across anyone that's actually using this peering at the moment.
Is it usually like that the peering is, well, it's cheaper than interconnect, right? So then interconnect, when you have like some big enterprises, they would definitely use interconnect, right? And peering is a cheaper option.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's when you would use it. Yeah. Or, you say you've only had a need to use Google Workspace, for instance, and you're not using any other cloud services, that's when you would use peering.
All right. Yep. Yeah, makes sense.
And you don't want to go over the public internet, you would use peering. Awesome. Let's move on. Dimi, what's going on at HashiCorp?
Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
It's now, IBM now owns HashiCorp. So IBM bought HashiCorp, all cash deal, $6.4 billion, which wow. is, lots of money. I think it's been kind of brewing, for a long time since they changed their licensing. I think it was a big deal, but, I'm a big fan of all these conspiracy theories, so I think that's when they already, had their interest in it. IBM now is quite powerful, right? Because they got like a Red Hat and HashiCorp, which is it seems to be like quite aligned in terms of like products and stuff. So like Red Hat would have Ansible and HashiCorp has Terraform, but no, it's definitely I guess good for IBM to make them more relevant, I suppose, in this. Well, as you were saying, it's it was generation one, generation two. Now it feels like IBM is kind of trailing behind. So this probably will modernize their stack, I suppose, in terms of products that they can offer now.
Yeah, but HashiCorp went closed source, and
I don't think it's a closed source. It's still open source. It's just that the license rights changed. So So it's still whole development and stuff. It's happening in the GitHub. So it's still open source, but I think there are some nuances of like when you want to use it in like for commercial. I think well, to be honest, I think that license, it was more about when other products are using Terraform for something. So some of the examples was that, the TerraGrant, right, which is like a wrapper when you want to run lots of Terraform from different folders and stuff. So those kind of things that I think they're trying to limit. Yeah.
Right. Okay. No. Yeah. You're ringing some bells there. That's right. It was a restriction around the commercial reuse of Terraform, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. But the Terraform itself. Well, interesting. Yeah, because we're always talking about Terraform. That article that about the buyback. It's actually that I think Vault. If you look at the commercial, where the money are coming from. I bet Vault is probably like the one that brings even more money than Terraform, because from what I know I've been to different big clients in Australia, big companies, and they all using Vault. So it's like if you think secrets, you would automatically think about Vault. And the thing is, if you thing about like you kind of for anything security related, you kind of pay this premium just to make sure that it's all secure. So yeah, I think that value of like of Vault is kind of even higher than Terraform. Even though like right. pretty much everyone is using Terraform, but commercially speaking, doesn't look like it's the one.
Right. Because Vault they can actually sell. I mean, it's a service that they can sell. Terraform's kind of a lead loss on it, right? Just to get everyone in the door.
Yeah.
Here you have Terraform for free. Use it, learn it. Then when you get into your big enterprise, we're gonna charge them to use Vault.
Yeah, that's right. That's a thing. Yeah.
All right. Well, Qantas has been in the news a bit lately. They got into big trouble, but they've also done themselves a mischief, and they exposed some customer data.
Yeah, that's interesting. It seemed to be like when people would open their Qantas app, they would see. Like not their information, but someone else's information, and I feel like the first name will be the same, but the last name will be like something else. And then every time they would open the Qantas app, so you close it and open, and then some other customer information will appear. So
sounds like a session ID thing, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I know because I've been caught up in something very similar a long time ago.
Well. Yeah, but well, yeah, I'm not quite sure how that could go into production, to be honest, but it did. And so yeah, it's been noticed by quite a few people on the internet, and like you could see boarding passes of other people as well. So yeah, I think it's kind of, I don't know, it's definitely like, you know, looks like just some developer bug, you know, something like that.
But for a short period there, the potential existed to board a plane as someone else.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So I imagine you're in the airport and then you just open your Qantas up and then you just go to the different flight. Yeah.
Oh, if you're not paying attention, it's like, oh, what gate? Oh, it's completely different gate, completely different flight.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Could definitely, yeah, could happen easily.
But anyway, they've come back and they've said they've resolved the issue with the app, which would allow customers to view the details of other passengers, including names and upcoming flights. Mm. It's not good enough. It really is not good enough. You can't keep exposing data like this.
Yeah, nah, 100%. Yeah, it's it seems to be like there is still kind of a missing link with all the security and data governance. Like, yeah, looks like we haven't got all the answers yet. I mean, there should be some next generation, I guess, of tools and preventative kind of things, and maybe the way we are working as well.
Yeah.
Yes, if you think about it,
AI, Gen 3. This is it. It's going to fix it.
Yeah.
Speaking of exposing data, Uncharmed, untangling IRAN's apt-42 operations. This is a blog from the Google Cloud blog. apt-42, an Iranian state-sponsored cyber espionage actor, is using enhanced social engineering schemes to gain access to victims' networks, including cloud environments. The actor is targeting Western and Middle Eastern NGOs, media organizations, academia, legal services, and activists. This is interesting.
Yeah, that's pretty much like it's almost like a research paper from Mandiant, who's like a cloud security company owned by Google. That's why it's on a Google blog. But yeah, they're just looking into the ways, and like they're going very deep into the details of how they were tricking people to, you know, just disclose their credentials. And there are like a kind of like clusters of those. So there's like a cluster which is trying to pretend to be news outlets, like a Washington Post, The Economist, Jerusalem Post, and others. And yeah, there another cluster that was just trying to make it as a legitimate service. Well, the one interesting that caught my interest was that people were getting the invitation to Google Meet, and when you go in there, it would actually show you the same screen as a Google Meet, and then they're just like, yeah, there will be a button like start verification where it asks you to enter your, you know, Gmail, like a
and log in and harvest everything password from you.
yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, that's but then yeah, I guess the one thing, right, because yeah, they're saying that it's all kind of governments are actually, you know, hiring these people to do that, which doesn't seem to be a good thing, to be honest. Yeah, the article goes into like into the lots of details, and I really enjoyed reading it. And yeah, so it would go even like into some interesting stuff when they would send like a PDF, and PDF will look like a legit, right? And there would be some link from this PDF, and then that one would actually go to the page that would harvest your credentials. And I thought, well, actually, you know, I thought about it. Yeah. So if, let's say I got like a PDF, well, I mean, I got an email with attachment, and like, if I open that attachment, I would kind of already trust, right? And if attachment looks legit, then, there's actually probably a very high chance that I will pay less attention to the link that I'm clicking from that PDF. So yeah.
Wow, some of these fake pages look really good.
Yeah.
They have done a good job. Even the Microsoft login page with the crappy font. I mean, it's just really legit. It looks legit.
Yeah.
You know how sometimes you can pick it, you just go, it's not quite right, but they nailed it.
Yeah, 100%.
They have nailed it. What do we got here? YouTube Studio. Boy, that looks good too. Office 365, LinkedIn, they got them all.
Mm.
Oh, even spoofing a multi-factor login page.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. They do it all. Just imagine how much effort would go into something like that, right?
Yeah, well, they're getting paid. They're getting a good pay from the government, you know. They're just sitting there whiling away on it, and the government gets some data, you know, from the West.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we've got a list of URLs. What are they telling us in here? So these are a bunch of credential harvesting domains that they list in this article, and they're saying that so things like The Economist, and Economist is misspelled EOC. That's the domain they've got, and you know, you click on it, you go there, and you know, you're not going to read it with that big a detail, and bang, your information's gone.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, I also found that they also got this URL shortening, like a bit.ly, lit.by, and others. So it's like, yeah, all those different, very, very smart.
Very tricky. Mm. Yeah, very, very tricky. So if you want to get a little peek behind the curtain on the way some of this works, and this article's a good one to look at. That domains are very, very tricky, one to look out for.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, it's that time of the show. Let's get on with the AI wars. All right, a couple of quick ones for the AI wars this week. this first one grabbed my attention. Scientists using Google Cloud to discover new asteroids that could wipe out entire cities. Yes, you heard it right. They could wipe out entire cities. That's a headline and grabber there. I mean, when you think about it, this is a perfect use case for AI. The technology works by using an algorithm to look through old pictures of the night sky instead of a telescope for asteroids in real time. The algorithm can find patterns that computers and humans are not able to identify. That's fantastic, right? When you think about it, there must be millions and millions and millions of photos of the night sky, and humans can't possibly process all of those. I mean, what have we got now? We might have some citizen science projects where school kids go through it, or like amateur astronomers go through it and look at all that. Why not just give it to an AI, right? It'll find the differences. It'll find where there's asteroids or hidden planets or things that move around. That's what we're looking for, right?
Yeah.
Perfect use case.
Yeah, 100%. Especially like I'm not an expert, but I thought all these photos of the skies, they're like it's using the huge resolution. Yeah, if you like open it on your, I don't know, monitor or screen, you need to like scroll through it like for a long, long time. So
yeah. So I don't know if you've ever seen the image of the James Webb Telescope Deep Sky Survey, right? It's a gorgeous image, right? You've got some lens flares happening there. You can actually see a warping of the light around some gravity, black holes and gravity wells that exist. That image, if you were to hold a grain of sand out at arm's length, right, that's the area of the sky that was surveyed to generate that image.
Yeah. Oh.
And there are thousands of galaxies in that image.
Yeah.
Right, in that tiny speck of grain of sand. And they've got just a bit of a tangent here. They've got a galaxy in that image that is almost as old as the actual universe itself. And it's raised a lot of questions because galaxies like that shouldn't have formed in that early universe. That's a whole nother discussion. But this is exactly the kind of thing that AI can do for us, right?
Yeah.
Can find this kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great use case. Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
And we won't get destroyed by asteroids in the process. So I like that as well.
Yeah.
That's good. And while talking about good use cases for AI, Gemini 1.5 is now being used to detect and analyze malware.
Yeah, that's again another one on the border of AI and security. The feature of Google's VirusTotal platform specializes in analyzing code snippets and generating reports in natural language, effectively emulating the approach of a malware analyst. So again, to reduce the labor and get humans to do something creative where they need some thinking, and like then all the things that you spend lots of time for a little gain. Yeah, you can ask AI to do it to
immediately.
Do it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Going back to what I was talking at the top of the show, this is exactly what they're doing. They took some WannaCry binaries. Mm. They fed it into Gemini 1.5 because the big advantage with Gemini 1.5 is you've got the million token
million
input.
Token, yeah.
Haven't been able to do that up to now. Mm. And it was able to disassemble the code and give you an assembly of that. And then not only that, provide suggestions on what the code does and what its impact could be. Just insane. And this is exactly what security analysts do. One of their big toolkits is being able to disassemble. I think IDA Pro is the tool that they use to do that. But then that requires you to be proficient in assembly language to go through and actually interpret what's going on. No more. But apparently Commodore 64 6502 assembly language from 40 years ago is beyond the ability of Gemini.
I also like that at the end of it, it's actually it would really help with the 0 days as well, because you can get you can get quicker to the results. That's when the times really matter. Yeah, when you got those 0 days.
What about? I'm just thinking here. What about something that was running real time? You know, as these things come through, I could see a large language model replacing our virus scanners, right?
Oh, yeah.
As these things come through, it on the fly analyzes the XE and goes, oh, this thing, you know, it gives you a threat level. And then it can blacklist stuff, you know, based on what it, I'm going to use the word here, what it thinks, right?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, that's actually, might happen.
Does it in seconds. So I don't think we're quite there yet, because it's not quite fast enough. It needs to be real time. It did say that an 833 kilobyte file was decompiled into 189,000 tokens, and it took Gemini 1.5 Pro 27 seconds to do that.
Yeah.
And that's with the report. That's with the analysis report as well, on what it could do.
Yeah.
And finally, look here what it's picked out. It's picked out, it's calling, you know, a Windows class a clipboard monitor class. Interesting. Why would you be calling that unless you want to look at the clipboard? It's found a string which corresponds to a Bitcoin address. Okay. And then website, which is a known potential use for communication, suspicious communications.
Yeah. And, well, yeah, I love it. And then it would say, yeah, that ultimate goal would be, right, it's to be stealing cryptocurrency by replacing Bitcoin addresses in the clipboard and evading detection by disabling security software.
Mm.
Mind-blowing, to be honest. Yeah. And
it knows. Yeah. It just made that analysis itself. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. And at the very bottom of this article, also there is a prompt that they were using. So, which is also, those prompts become like, you know, a new Stack Overflow thing. So you always need a prompt. But yeah, at the end of the article, there is a prompt that they used exactly to do this.
Maybe this is the prompt I need for my...
For your Commodore, yeah.
My Jumpman code, yeah.
Yeah. Here you go, yeah. Maybe you didn't ask.
I can ask, I'll try after we finish recording. All right, Timmy, we might wrap it up there, hey? It's been a great show.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Great.
Thanks. Don't forget to go to iTunes, write a review for the show. You can also contact the show, gcplife@mantlegroup.com.au. Why not go to YouTube? I'm posting this stuff on YouTube now. It's all happening automatically, of course. You can start the discussion there in the YouTube comments. And don't forget, today's sponsor is Mantle Group. At Mantle Group, we make your Google Cloud solutions possible. That's about it for us from this fortnight. You got anything else to add, Nimmy? Go and get better, by the way.
Thanks, Steve. Yeah. Hopefully we'll be back.
Yeah, all right. We're going to get out of here and we'll catch you next fortnight. Awesome. Bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey, I caught up with Dave Wall and Ian Brown earlier today. They're going all right.
Oh, nice.